The following podcast contains coarse language, adult themes, and major plot spoilers. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello everybody, this is B. Jermaine, aka The Terrible Australian, and welcome back to the long-awaited new episode of Podcasters of Horror, which is our retrospective podcast series on the TV horror anthology series Masters of Horror. And with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, the one, the only, Super Marcy. Hello Marcy, how are you?
Hey Beat, I'm doing well as can be expected now that we're in lockdown part two.
Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah, locked out too. Electric Boogaloo. Yes. Maybe not as exciting as Breakin' 2, but I guess we are coping as best as we can. So, yeah, not a lot to report. We're staying home.
Well,
how are you?
At the moment, I'm still at home, but I'm. I guess at the time... I'm still in the process of moving to my new place, but I think by the time this episode drops online, I'll hopefully already be moved into my new flat. COVID be damned, I need to get out of this place and go to a new one, so nothing's going to stop me, Marcy.
Moving is essential, Bede.
I know that, but, you know, the cops can't stop me, so...
No, it's essential, you have to move.
Exactly, so... But I'm definitely looking forward to... you know, just finally get the move out of the way and then finally go into my new place, which I'm excited about, and then take the long couple weeks process of being in lockdown to make it into a home. So,
yeah, well, you've got like 5 weeks left of lockdown to, you know, get all that stuff done. So,
yeah, and also, like, hopefully by the time that happens, the borders will open up, and my brother, who I bought the place with, he's going to come down and he's going to move in early next year. So hopefully, the borders will open up and he can come down and then he can sort of have his 2 cents on how he wants the place to look and then add a bunch of other little cool little features to the place. So, and yeah, so I'm really excited about that. It's we'll see how the next couple of weeks go. But that being said, though, like I said, I am pretty excited about it nonetheless.
Yes. Exciting times ahead, even though I won't be able to visit for a while.
Yeah, but don't worry, once they are lifted, you and Graham can definitely come down to visit, and that'll be awesome.
Yes, yes, we shall.
Yes, but interesting enough, Marcy, we are not alone on this episode.
No, we're not.
Yeah, we usually do podcasts of horror on our own, but we have had a guest in the past, but it has been a while since we've had one, but we managed to arrange for someone to be on the show. And believe it or not, this is a first-time guest who has never been on the show before, but I know for a fact has been watching Masters of Horror recently, and is a guy who I guess a lot of people out there would know him best by his name on Twitter, which is DJ Kaiser. But I know him personally because we have met and hung out in real life at the Melbourne International Film Festival last year. And that, of course, is Chris Barnes. Hello, Chris.
G'day, Bede. Hey, Marcy. How's it going, guys?
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, hello.
Hello. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me on.
No worries. How have you been coping?
You won't be saying that in 20 minutes.
Yeah, that is true. Everyone says they're happy to come on, and then by the end of the episode, everyone will be like, what the fuck have I done?
Yeah, hopefully not today.
Yeah, but how you been going, Chris? How you been coping with COVID? But I know in South Australia, where you live, it's a little bit of a different story compared there.
I am actually regretting my decision to move from Adelaide to Melbourne now.
Yeah. No, when you were talking about the quarantine and lockdown, I was getting ready to brag it up. You know, living in Adelaide, South Australia, don't know what a lockdown is at the moment. Life's pretty sweet, so enjoying the freedom at the moment.
And watching lots of movies as well.
yeah, knocking them down. You know, I've got the choice to go anywhere I want, but look, I'm going to stay home and watch movies.
Yeah, I think that's been something I think a lot of us have been doing as well. I know. I mean, I haven't been watching much recently, except that Marcy and I have been watching stuff online together over Discord, which has been a lot of fun. And has even given us a couple of ideas for a new podcast, which we won't diverge yet, because that's a
secret.
It's a very secret podcast, but it will be revealed in a few weeks, which is very exciting. But before we actually get to two episodes of Masters of Horror that we're going to be talking about tonight, Chris, how familiar are you? I mean, before, because I know you've watched both seasons of the show recently, but how familiar were you of Masters of Horror before your recent watch? Like, were these all rewatches for you, or were they first time watches? Were you a fan or not a fan? What's your relationship with the series?
Yeah, great question. They were rewatches, my most recent run through, because the first time I did watch them was when they came out. I remember vividly when they came out and how exciting it was to have all these hour-long episodes from some of my favourite directors at the time, and just absolutely devoured them. I bought the DVDs, box sets when they came out, and I think I watched them probably three or four times each and loved every minute of it. But it's been, I don't know how long has it been, about 15 years since it originally came out?
Yeah, well, because it dropped, but here in Australia, it played on Showtime Premiere here in Australia every Friday night. And so I always made sure I was unavailable to do anything on Friday night, just so I can just stay home and watch the show.
Nice. Yeah, for me, I definitely loved them and was really made the decision to do a rerun because I wanted to see how they'd hold up today, because in 15 years' time, I've watched a fair amount of movies and I've always had this love for the series in the back of my mind. But sometimes you don't know whether it's safe to go home again or not. So I thought I'd take the plunge and find out.
Indeed. But we'll find out what your thoughts on the two episodes we're going to be talking about shortly. So we'll get right to it. And first up, of course, we're going to be talking about the season finale episode of season one of Masters of Horror, which I guess it is safe to say is probably without a doubt the most controversial episode of the entire series. And that, of course, is Takashi Miike's imprint.
There is a place at the edge of perception where pain is everywhere and fear is the air you breathe. In your head, whisper that death is the only escape.
Which, of course, is directed by Takashi Miike, who is the director of so many films, and literally this man has made over 100 films, so it is pretty hard to pinpoint exactly which films in particular, but some of the ones he has directed include like Ichi the Killer, First Love, Yakuza Apocalypse, 13 Assassins, One Missed Call, and also probably the film I would say was the one that kind of broke him out to, I guess, Western audiences, which of course is his 1999 film Audition. And this episode in particular was written by, and I'm probably going to be butchering names tonight, so please forgive me, is Daisuke Tengen, and it's based on a novel by Shimako Iwa. Again, if I butchered any names, please forgive me. Oh, and this episode, of course, stars Billy Drago, Yuki Kudo, Toshi Nagishi, and many more. And the plot summary for this one is 19th century American tourist gets more than he bargained for while searching for a Japanese prostitute he fell in love with years earlier. Now, I guess the bit of background into why this is one of the most controversial episodes of the entire series of Masters of Horror is this was one that whose content, and we will go into full spoilers on this episode, but let's just say that when you get Takashi Miike, the director who has made so many disturbing, unsettling horror films, or just any film in general, to direct an episode for a TV show, you're not going to get anything that's really standard or safe. And it's pretty safe to say that he definitely set out what he wanted to make was a Takashi Miike film for Western audiences. And this episode was so controversial to the point that it was so disturbing that the Showtime that produced Masters of Horror actually banned the episode from airing on television. Even when they edited the episode down, sort of get rid of all the sort of more disturbing content, but it just was just too much for audiences. But then, of course, the episode did eventually get released via DVD later on. But bizarrely enough, in Australia, where we're best known for banning anything in Australia, the episode did manage to air on Showtime Premiere in Australia, in edited form, of course, which is kind of surprising. And yeah, I mean, there's so much to say about this episode, but to start off with, Chris, what are your first initial thoughts on Imprint? Like, back when you first watched it, and how does the episode hold up now compared to then?
Yeah, sure. I think first up, when I first watched it, all I could really think was, what the fuck? It was pretty out there, even by Takashi Miike's standards, really. I think for content, maybe, you know, Ichi the Killer might have been a bit more gory. But in terms of how dark this material is, that's what struck me at first. He really went to some interesting places. And, yeah, it took me aback. So my initial thoughts were, this is something special. This is not really what you get with TV, but hey, it was Miike, so you're not going to get what you'd expect with TV anyway. In terms of how it's held up, I think beautifully. Through the two seasons rewatching it, Imprint still stands out as my favourite episode from the two series. I just think how he approached it and how it was made, the filmmaking aspects to it, truly sensational. The cinematography is brilliant. And even Billy Drago, I was thinking, you know, in my recent rewatch, I was like, oh, I don't know how I'm going to feel about his performance. But as hammy as it is, I think it's perfect for the film.
Now, Marcy, you had never seen Imprint prior to this episode. So, and I did watch this episode with you, mainly for the fact I just wanted to see your reactions to the episode. So what did you think of Imprint overall?
Yeah, so this was my first time watching this particular episode. And I guess its reputation was in the back of my mind. So I was a little nervous. I'm like, oh man, this is going to be really messed up. And but it was messed up, just not in the way I was expecting it to be. Overall, it was, I guess, it was an interesting film. I agree with what you've said about the cinematography and everything like that. It's really stunning. Like, I think, like, visually, all of that stuff is amazing. And I agree with Billy Drago's performance. It's very hammy, but it actually really suits the movie. Yeah, the stuff that's actually like very full-on, quite gory, it is, how do I explain it? It is done in a way that I did not expect, and it's very brutal. It is very hard to watch. Yeah, and as the story unravels, it's quite an interesting little tale. And yeah, as it kind of unravels, I think I said something like, Takeshi Miike, remade Basket Case.
Yes.
Yeah. but it's absolutely one of the highlights of season one. And I can understand, maybe not so much what, like, it getting banned, but maybe just cutting down a few things.
Hmm.
There are other bits that are just, I'd just say it's just gross.
Yeah.
And stuff you really don't want to see, rather than it being disturbing. And that's, there's a lot of fetuses in this movie.
Yes. Lots and lots of fetuses. There's
abortions and fetuses and, yeah. And I guess it is a really interesting story. And I think it kind of more goes over, I think, as a tale of good and evil or heaven and hell in a way. That's just how I kind of interpreted it. So,
yeah.
And I'm like rambling on. So, Bede.
Yes.
Share your thoughts, mate.
Yeah, well, the thing was, though, I can pretty much sum up this entire episode by one thing. And when I watched this episode for the first time, one of my best mates, who I grew up with, Todd, he came over and, like, he'd seen a couple of the episodes, but I believe when this episode aired, it was on the same night as two other episodes, Pick Me Up and Heckle's Tale. So this was the last one. And after watching the episode, he pretty much summed up everything what I thought about the episode. He just, after it was over and the credits were done, my friend Todd just looked at me and he just said, "Dude, that was fucked up." And it truly is. And I was really taken aback. Like, I had seen Audition up to that point, and I think that was the only thing I'd seen of McKay from him. And Imprint was the second project of his that I'd watched from his filmography. Like, I've watched a lot more since then, so I know what he is like as a director and his varied styles and in how he approaches his films. And but for me, Imprint, even rewatching it again just the other day, it still has not lost its power. For me, I think it is a truly great episode. It definitely, for me, is one of the best episodes, not of just the first season of the show, but the entire series. Definitely, I would say in my top three, for sure. And there's a lot of great things about it. Like, yeah, some of the things he tackles with the story can basically just come across as shock value at times. Like, I mean, other than aborted fetuses, you've got, like, needles being put under fingernails and mouths and what else is there? There's so
it
much.
It is a horrible torture sequence.
Yeah, there is a really long and very disturbing torture sequence that when you think it just could not get any worse, it somehow does. But at the same time, though, that as grotesque and as unsettling as it is, it is also very beautiful as well. Like, the cinematography, as you both said, is just stunning. Like, there's some absolutely beautiful shots. Like, even though this episode was made for TV, it was shot entirely in Japan with a Japanese crew. So it definitely, out of all the episodes of Masters of Horror, this one did feel at least the most cinematic out of all of them. And also, like, the production design, the music is all great. Billy Drago, I was kind of on and off about his performance because, like, when he's on, but other times he just almost, like, played it like he was Tommy Wiseau, which was kind of hilarious. But I think for me, the best performance in the whole film is definitely Yuki Kudo, who I thought was fantastic. Mm-hmm. And as the film progresses along and we find out more about her character and her backstory, it's very unpredictable when that's being shown, because that's the thing, though. That's like every second, like, this episode just kind of threw me into a loop in terms of where it was going with its story. Like, it almost does this, well, not technically a Rashomon style, but it's just basically when her character meets Billy Drago's character, the first half is like she's telling the story about what happened to the woman he is looking for in a more, I guess, like, this version of the story that he thinks he would want to hear. But when he asks her, "I want to know what really happened to her," that's when it goes into far more messed up, far more scary territory. And there's actually some genuinely creepy moments as well. Like, there are moments in this episode that actually still give me chills. Like, I remember there's one little sequence where Billy Drago is talking to Yuki Kudo, and then just behind her, you see, like, this sort of ghostly kind of figure coming out from behind her, and it's, like, the filmmaking doesn't bring any attention to it at all. It's just there, and when you kind of see it, it just sends shivers down your spine. And when you find out that Yuki Kudo's character has a twin sister that's basically attached to her head and makes her do homicidal things, it is pretty messed up. Like, the visual effect, the effects of it, it can be a little hokey, but it still works regardless. But overall, I think it's a really great episode. Like, there are problems with it. I think some of the supporting cast weren't that great, but I think because a lot of since this is a, you know, made for Western audiences, all the actors had to speak in English. And I think a lot of the supporting cast might have had to struggle with doing all their dialogue in English because it came across as phonetic, I think. Some of them sort of struggled more than others. Like Yuki Kudo, she's very fluent in English, so she came off really well. But some of her co-stars, some of them did really well, but others didn't quite do as well. And I think it would have been better if maybe some of the flashback scenes could have just been done in Japanese, and I feel like their performances would have been a lot better. But overall, I think it's a great episode, and it's a truly memorable one that even 15 years after I've seen it for the first time, there are things about it that have stuck with me. And I think, to me, that's the sign of a really good film.
Absolutely. I think, yeah, your comment about the language barrier there is pretty accurate, because I remember thinking when watching it, if this was in spoken word Japanese, it would have elevated it even further for me. Mm. And another comment you made around the production values and the cinematography, I mean, that is absolutely... That came home to me when doing the rewatch of the two series, is that they reuse most of the same crew throughout for the episodes, and it's really clear. Like, it's a TV crew. They've worked on other TV shows before, and it all looks like TV, whereas this looks completely different. This looks like cinema, essentially. Mm. And Marcy, you were talking about the heaven and hell, like alluding to that theme. I think that's spot on, because this really reminded me of one of Mikkei's other works, which hasn't been seen enough, but it's called Over Your Dead Body.
That's a good one. Oh, that's a really good movie.
Mate, let's represent for that one, because that's the real theatrical approach to Japanese folklore, that it feels like it's on another plane, and I think that's what Imprint achieved as well.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I can definitely see that, Chris, because, I mean, it has been a while since I've seen Over Your Dead Body, and if our listeners have not seen that film, definitely check it out. It's really good. But there definitely is some similarities between the two, and I can definitely see that now when you mention it, like, sort of thinking back on the episode of Imprint. But one of the things I think... Also, another thing I think I found interesting about the film, like, with Billy Drago's performance, like, I'm sort of making fun of his performance, because his performances can be very hammy at times, but I kind of feel like, because I remember reading, like, ages back, that Rutger Hauer was originally going to play the part, but he had to drop out, so I kind of wonder, like, how he would have approached the role. I think he would have done it a far more subtle way than Billy Drago probably would have, but I think for most part, Billy Drago... even though I feel like his performance is a bit of a mixed bag, he does well with some of the more messed up elements of the story, particularly when the final scene of the episode, which is just absolutely haunting stuff. But that's the whole thing about this episode. It really is a haunting experience. And like I said, even though until recently rewatching this episode, I had never forgotten this episode. Images and moments just still linger in my mind in those 15 years. And I guarantee you, it's probably still going to linger on in another 15 years from now. And in a way, it's funny. I have not seen Miike, even though I've seen a lot of his work since then, even the ones that I feel like are his have the reputations of being his most disturbing, most messed up films, none of them have really hit me as much as Imprint has. And I'm sort of wondering why that is. And I guess it compared to some of those films, which I guess go for a bit more shock value. And it's not to say there isn't that in this episode, but I think it sort of hits more emotionally with the characters because it make than it does in those films. But that's just me, though.
Yeah. Oh, well, I think generally, for the most part, and with exception, of course, but his most mainstream controversial films have been pretty comical. There's been some lightness to the darkness, if you will. So with the grotesque gore and things like that, you can usually have a laugh at it. But essentially, there's not many laughs to be had in this one. It's a pretty depressing tale.
Yeah, it's very I can't think of the right word. It's like it's depressing. It's like living through melancholy, in a way, I guess, just more brutally.
Yeah. But it has this. Sorry. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, like, the torture scene, I think, sums up exactly how it feels to be in second lockdown.
Well, that'll be how we feel at least in week three.
I'm feeling it as not even week one. We haven't even made it a week yet.
Agreed. But yeah,
think I'm actually growing a parasitic twin on my head.
Yes.
I think I'm going that crazy.
Indeed. But I guess
that may be one of the fetuses that have washed down the river to feed him.
Yes, I guess so. And I'm totally, and I am now totally cancelled by all of social media. But that was bound to happen sooner or later. But anyway,
yeah. Join the club, babe.
Yes, exactly.
We are all cancelled.
Yes, we're all. You can't cancel someone if we already think they've been cancelled. So there you go.
I was cancelled in like 2009.
Before it was
ever a thing.
Yes. But I would say, like, even I can understand people not liking this episode, especially when you sort of compare it to the previous episodes and the lead up to it. Like, some people would probably think, oh, some of these ones are a bit disturbing, a bit too much. But when they get to this one, they'll be like, okay, I'm out. Especially when they get to that torture scene. But that's the thing. Takashi Miike has always been one of those filmmakers that you either go with his work or you don't. Like, he's not somebody who's gonna hold your hand through it, especially like I said, he has made some pretty mainstream stuff as well. Like, you know, 13 Assassins, Blade of the Immortal, those are pretty mainstream works of his. But at the same time, though, like, when it comes to his more sort of disturbing and brutal stuff, he is pretty much like, well, this is what it is. It's going to be unflinching. It's going to be hard to watch. So you either go with it or you don't. And I got to give him a lot of props for, I guess, with a lot of directors, especially a Masters of Horror, because I've never felt like any of the episodes, as much as I enjoyed quite a lot of them, had never really kind of taken me aback, like, or I found at least scary. I would say Imprint is definitely the closest to the point where it did actually scare me and also unsettle me as well, because he just went full ball with it, and I got to give him a lot of props for that. But overall, yeah, I mean, it's a great episode. Like I said, it's not for everybody, but I would definitely recommend, if you got the stomach for it, definitely check out this episode for sure. But Chris, what rate overall final thoughts on Imprint and also your rating of it?
Yeah, look, I love it. Like I said, it was my favourite of the two series together combined. So I'm a big fan. I'm also notoriously harsh with my ratings.
Indeed, so, you are.
out of five, yeah, the colour out of space is a not getting mentioned tonight, is it?
That could happen at the end of the show, but I digress. Oh,
but yeah, for imprint, I've given this one a gentleman's 3.5 out of 5, which is a high recommend from me.
Awesome. Marcy, what rating do you give for imprint and also your final thoughts on the episode?
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting episode. Glad I finally seen it. Can't say I'm in a hurry to watch it again.
At least in another 15 years from now.
Yeah, maybe. But I appreciate the film and what he was trying to say. And I think I like, I guess, the metaphors that are in there. But yeah, I'd probably give it 4 out of 5. It's not my favorite Masters episode, which I've already mentioned on a previous episode what that is, and that episode will still stay with me, I think, a lot more than this one. So yeah,
awesome.
Definitely one of the better episodes, the more interesting episodes.
Oh yeah, and we didn't even scratch the surface of like the other messed up stuff that this episode does. Like, I'm just like reading over the synopsis again. I pretty much have to remember, like, not only does this have like aborted fetuses, torture, it has like incest and as well, and molestation. So if that type of stuff is very triggering to our audience, probably not best to watch this episode. But for those who are still interested, though, definitely worth checking out for sure. Like I said, I think it's one of the best of not just the first season but the entire series. And I just think it's one that I'll always come back to, and one that, regardless on, like, the overall series itself, which I do love, I think this one will always be one of the big highlights for me. So if I had to give this one a rating, you know what, I'm going to give it 4.5. I think it's definitely not only one of my, like I said, not only one of the best of the entire series, I would say it's probably one of my favorite Miike films as well.
Nice.
Now, well, that is the end of season one of Masters of Horror. We've gone through the entire first season. Now, we'll move right on to the second season, the second and final season, unfortunately. So, for the second season, for the second season, they sort of brought back a lot of the filmmakers who worked on the first season, like Stuart Gordon, John Carpenter, Joe Dante, and many others, and as well as brought a couple of new ones as well. So for this very first episode, they had got Tobe Hooper, who of course is the director of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, among others, to bring us his second episode for the entire series. And that, of course, is The Damned Thing.
I remember hearing the stories when I was a kid.
Thank the Lord for his love and grace.
Witnesses described an overwhelming force. Neighbors became enemies. Fear became violence.
You had me, you bastard!
Official story was the town turned on itself. People died like animals. The damn thing destroyed the whole town.
And the plot summary for this one is the apocalyptic tale of a monstrous unseen force that devastates Sheriff Kevin Reddell's family and terrorizes their small Texas community. Now, of course, directed by Tobe Hooper, who in the first season directed the episode Dance of the Dead. And of course, he re-teams with his Dance of the Dead writer, Richard Christian Matheson, and the episode is based on a short story by Ambrose Birch, and it also stars Sean Patrick Flannery, Marissa Coughlin, Brendan Fletcher, and Ted Raimi. Now, I'll say this about the episode. Like, it's interesting, when I think we talked about this on the episode with Dance of the Dead, Marcy, that I remember when that episode first aired, I was not a fan of that episode. And I didn't like it at all. But then when we sort of rewatch it in prep for the podcast, I liked it a lot more. Like, I appreciated it a lot more. And, but the thing is, with Dan, the Dan thing, at the time when I first saw this episode, I thought it was a huge improvement on Dance of the Dead. But now, I'm going the opposite direction, in that now, having rewatched it again for this podcast, it's definitely gone down a bit since my first watch of it. And, like, it's not a bad episode. It is watchable. But it's, I feel like it doesn't, it has an interesting concept at the center of it, but I don't feel like it really sort of fully developed it, though. But we'll get right to, but we'll get to that shortly. But, Chris, tell us your thoughts on The Damned Thing.
Oh, are you sure you want to hear them?
Well, we are ready. We are ready for this.
I'm ready.
Okay. Well, yeah. What a 1-2 punch. You go from Imprint, that is probably, in my opinion, the finest of the Masters of Horror episodes. And then you go straight into The Damned Thing. And I'm sorry to say, but I found it to probably be the worst of the whole series, unfortunately. And that made Tobe Hooper, as much of a legend as he is, and the director of one of my favourite horrors, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, so it gives me no pleasure to say, but I think he turned out to be a bit of a two-time loser for Masters of Horror, because...
Ouch.
Dance of the Dead, look, it's no The Damned Thing. There's still a bit to like in it, but I couldn't find anything to like in The Damned Thing. I thought Sean Patrick Flannery was horrible, much like the rest of the cast. I thought the acting was really below par, and he commits that really awkward offense where you have this kind of like unknown terror, this indescribable monster, and then it goes on to show you that monster, and it's really bad CGI, akin to that you saw in the TV movie The Langoliers. It's just, oh my god, I can't look at this thing because it looks too horrible. So I had a really bad time with The Damned Thing. I wasn't impressed at all, and I just couldn't believe the drop in quality from the last episode of the first season. Whew, sorry, Toby.
Marcy, this was your I believe this was this your first time watching the episode, because I can't remember if it was.
I can't even remember. So maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. But at least like on this watch, I thought it was just okay. It kind of dragged a little bit. I didn't find the story to be all that interesting. The performances were okay. Yeah, in the end, it just felt like it was trying to say something about what people go through for oil, because being that this was, what, like 2006?
Yep.
Obviously, the wars and oil and everything, I just felt like it was trying to say something, but it wasn't doing a good job of that. And it just, it didn't really work, so... It is probably one of the lesser episodes, and I do think Dance of the Dead was a lot more enjoyable than this was. This just didn't really go anywhere or do much, and that's pretty much all I really have to say on it. Like, I do adore Tobe Hooper.
Yeah.
But this just wasn't one of his finest works.
I mean, I already said... some of my initial thoughts at the beginning, like, I think, I mean, when, before we got into this episode, but like I said, I think, like, I kind of agree with you, Marcy, that I think overall it is an okay episode, but it doesn't really hold up as much as it did the first time I watched it. Like I said previously, that there are some interesting elements within the episode, but I feel like the script is pretty underdeveloped, and it doesn't really sort of explore those aspects enough to make it into something much more interesting, which, even though like Dance of the Dead has its flaws, but you can definitely tell watching that episode that Tobe Hooper and Richard Christian Matheson definitely had something to say with that material for the episode. And you can tell there was a lot of passion behind it and a lot of experimentation with it as well. But here, I just didn't get the sense of that in this episode. And I do agree where you can definitely tell he is trying to say something because this is an episode where probably the most interesting stuff is just happens in the background, like the sort of the backstory of like what happened in the past to the main character's father and grandfather, because I believe from what I remember, like his grandfather in another previous town, they dug up oil and then it just sort of unleashed this creature that seems to have a vendetta against his family, because not only does it kill his grandfather, but it also kills his father and then it so comes after him. But at the same time, this creature kind of sort of sends all the people in this small town into complete utter madness and violence. There are, like I said, that's interesting stuff, but I don't feel like the execution of it does it in a way that's interesting, or at least for me anyway. But it's not to say that it's an entirely bad episode. Like, there are some things about it I did enjoy. I didn't think the acting was too bad. I think everyone was fine. Some better than others, of course. I did enjoy Ted Raimi's sort of very over-the-top priest character. And, like, his character felt like out of a completely different film, but he pretty much steals.
It did.
But that's the thing, though. You just never know, because whether that character was kind of already crazy because of the oil monster, or was he already like that before all this happened? So I like that sort of ambiguity there. And also some of the more violent scenes were pretty effective. Like, there's one scene in particular where a character, like a minor character, is like fixing something around his house, and then he goes and say and literally bashes his own face in with a hammer. And every time that scene happens, like every time I watch this episode, that scene just always gets me. It's just like the veracity of that scene and just how like unflinching it is. But then again, when you see his dead body later, it's like the hammer didn't really do any that much damage to his face to begin with. And also, like, some of the more experimental style that Toby Hooper kind of did with Dance of the Dead, he kind of brings back here again for this one, like a lot of the hand crank movements and stuff like that. You know, kind of some of the stuff that Tony Scott did during the 2000s with a lot of his films. But I feel like with Dance of the Dead, it worked for that type of story, since it was kind of this almost punk kind of metal feel to that episode. And him using that again for this episode just felt really out of place and unneeded, since it was kind of more of a traditional kind of horror story than compared to Dance of the Dead. And also, it just sort of ends on a very anticlimactic note as well. I guess it's meant to be ambiguous about what happens to Sheriff Riddle's ex-wife and son. Like, did the monster kill them or didn't? But because it just basically goes to black before anything happens. But it did, for me, it just kind of ended on a more anticlimactic note.
Unfinished, it felt like it just got mid-reel and they ran out of money, is how it felt to me. On the thematic content, that's really interesting, a point that you both raised, actually, because I know a lot of the episodes of Masters of Horror have had some pretty strong social commentary, particularly around the topics that were important at the time. But with this one, the effectiveness just wasn't there. And I didn't realize about that connection to oil and what it meant until you mentioned it, Marcy. And then I was like, oh, yeah, that was a thing, wasn't it? But it didn't really strike home during the, no pun intended, didn't really strike home during the actual episode.
I think, like, when we watched it, just was so obvious because there was this, like, oil monster thing and they're talking about the oil's drying up and it's driving everyone mad. And I'm like, yeah, this is definitely trying to say something.
And it's funny that, like, it never even occurred to me. And especially with, because, like, a lot of the, some of the episodes in, the first season of the show did deal with a lot of stuff that was happening around that time post the Iraq war. And some episodes in season two did deal with that as well. But I just never really sort of made that connection with the oil. But maybe that was probably because, maybe compared to Dance of the Dead, this episode, besides being underdeveloped, they probably rushed it as well. I don't know. Like, I feel there's like I said, those themes are definitely interesting, but it just never came across. So I don't know whether it's, if that's a good thing or a bad thing, that it takes a much more subtle approach, or it just didn't do that good of a job to kind of dive into those themes.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because it could have been better, could have been more interesting, but it is what it is.
It is what it is. And that's a damn shame. See what I did there?
That's the damn shame.
Damn shame. But
but these days, the damned thing is called COVID-19.
Exactly. Exactly. So there definitely is some social relevance to this episode even today, but I digress. I guess we'll wrap up this episode
to give it ratings.
Oh, no, sorry. I meant to say, we'll share our final... I'll start again. We'll share our final thoughts on this very first episode of the second season of Masters of Horror. So, Chris, your final thoughts on the Dan thing and also your rating for it, too.
All right. Look, I was just glad to get the damn thing over with. Oh, my gosh, that made me groan. Like I said, I wasn't too much of a fan of it. I found it difficult to sit through. I think going from the high of Imprint and the standard that Mika had set in that made this a real tough one to stomach. So the production values and some of the directorial decisions he made, like you mentioned, the overcranking and things like that, left a sour taste in my mouth. So I gave this one a solitary 1 star out of 5.
Ouch. And Marcy, your final thoughts on the damn thing and as well as your rating for it.
Yeah, my final thoughts are it was okay. It's there. And my rating is 2 out of 5.
My final thoughts on the episode, I think it is watchable. I can definitely sit there and watch this episode with no problems, but compared to sort of how I feel about it now, compared to when I watched it the first time 15 years ago, definitely my experience with it has changed a lot, because I really liked it the first time I watched it and thought it was a huge improvement compared to Dance of the Dead. But unfortunately, it's kind of gone a completely different end of the spectrum, because I never thought in a million years I would say Dance of the Dead was a better overall movie than this one was. But overall, like I said, it is watchable. But it just feel like it could have been a lot better, and it just felt just pretty underdeveloped and also a bit unfinished and kind of rushed as well. Has its moments, but yeah, it's okay, but kind of mediocre. So if I had to give this episode a rating, I'm going to give it 2.5. Not as harsh as both of you were, but... because, like I said, it is watchable, but it's kind of overall. So that's the end of this episode of Podcasters of Horror. I hope all of our listeners enjoyed it. And thanks, Chris, for coming on to the show as well.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, thank you both. It's been my pleasure, absolutely. Always good to talk the breeze about Masters of Horror. So, yeah, thank you very much.
And you're always welcome to come back anytime.
Oh, cheers. Hopefully I'll... if you need someone for pelts...
Well, we'll put you down for pelts. Actually, that would be... that's probably a few episodes from now. Let me see. That'd be at least 3 episodes from now.
Nice.
And I
consider yourself penciled in.
Penciled in for pelts.
Yeah.
And for the next episode of Masters Horror, we're going to be talking about... John Landis, who we love talking about on the first a couple of episodes back.
Yeah.
He'll be back with his second episode for the series, Family. And also, we have the first of the new directors contributing an episode, which is Ernest Dickerson, who will be contributing the episode The V Word. So our audience have a lot to look forward to with the next episode.
But, yes, indeed.
But before we wrap up, Chris, where can people find you on the internet this week?
Sure. Well, pretty simple. Most of the socials that I'm on, you can find me at DJ_Kaiser. And the main ones I hang out on the old Twitter letterbox. Yeah, those two will do it, I reckon.
But you do contribute to a few websites as well as a writer.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Do have a look at Cinema Etc. That's a fantastic website, which I'm one of the least of the contributors, but there's some fantastic writing on there, so get around that one.
Awesome. And I might also harass you later with more, like, why don't you give Color Out of Space, like, a higher rating, man? Like, what's going on? Even with when you're talking about films that have nothing to do with Color Out of Space, but I just drop that comment every now and again.
Oh, it always puts a smile on my face.
Yes. But, Marcy, where can people find you on the internet this week?
All right. Well, my usual hangout is twitter.com/supermarcy. So you can find me there, chat to me there. I don't give out my personal Facebook, and I'm banned from using it at the moment, and I don't know why.
Yeah, how dare you, Facebook?
You can follow the Super Network on Twitter at twitter.com/sm_supernetwork. You can like our Facebook page at facebook.com/thesupernetwork. You can join our Facebook group. You just have to search the Super Network Facebook group or the Super Network under groups on Facebook. And when I'm unbanned, I will be posting there again. You can send all your hate mail directed at bead@thesupernetworksm@gmail.com. And of course, you can subscribe and become a Patreon at patreon.com/thesupernetwork. I think we are 5 Patreons away from unlocking one of our first goals, which is Bede is going to wear his Nicolas Cage tracksuit and he is going to read Edgar Allan Poe as Nicolas Cage. So
indeed,
it's worth signing up for just $1. You can get that.
Exactly. As low as $1, you can see me do that, and I will make a video of it and post it online. And I promise all of our listeners out there, it will be the performance of my career.
It will be. And,
sold.
Two last things, obviously. You can check me out at The Art of MP on, if you look it up on Instagram or Facebook, you can like my art page. Hopefully I'll be doing more art as well. And you can always find us on, you can find the podcast, sorry, on iTunes, Stitcher, Castbox, and Spotify. And Bede, your turn.
Awesome. If people want to find me personally, they can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/bejamine. Or they can go to, of course, our website, supermarcy.com, and find a lot of our writings there. And all my reviews and columns and whatnot. I've recently posted my latest bad movie tweet-a-thon on Fateful Findings, which is a movie that almost broke me, I'm not afraid to say. But it was fun to live tweet that movie for the column. And also, you can also check out all of our podcasts, The King Zone, previous episodes of Podcasters of Horror, and also all of our regular episodes of the Super Podcast. We've got 2 awesome audio commentaries up there at the moment with On the Fanatic and Howard the Duck, which were a lot of fun to do. And also, if you want to read more of my stuff, you can also go to thescreamcast.com and check out my column, The Horror Down Under, which I write and talk about Australian horror films. And I haven't written one in a little while, mainly because I have been busy with moving out of my place, but I will be working on a brand new one very soon once I move into the new flat. So keep a lookout for that. And and also people want to find my personal Facebook page, they can, personal pages and writers page, sorry. They can find me at facebook.com/terrible Aussie as well. And
that's a wrap.
That's a wrap. And once again, thanks to all our listeners for listening to this episode of Podcasters of Horror. Apologies for it being been a long time since it's been long since the previous episode, but we will be back with new episodes very soon. And we'll see you all then. See you, everyone. Bye.
Bye.